RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the November 13th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and coming up here on this week's edition of the show, we're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend at Bellator 233 and UFC Moscow. We're going to preview this weekend's Bellator 234 and UFC Sao Paulo. We'll talk about a pair of MMA news items regarding Gilbert Melendez now being a free agent and some comments that Khabib Nurmagomedov said about the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Plus, I'm going to have three interviews for you. You're going to hear my conversation with James Krause, who fights on Saturday at UFC Sao Paulo. Also, you hear conversations I had with Lent Vassell and Austin Vanderford. Of course, both those men are going to be fighting on Thursday in Israel at Bellator 234. And unfortunately, this is an event that to watch these fights, you got to wait about 36 hours after they happen. They're going to air Friday night on the Paramount Network and DAZN. So all that come up here on this week's edition of the show. I do want to mention this podcast is now available on iHeartRadio. So if you listen to podcasts on iHeartRadio, you can now listen to the MMA Report podcast there. Of course, also available at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com. So with all that out of the way, let's get right into the show. Daniel, man, how's your week off to, man?
You know, it was a rough start to the week. The cold fronts are coming down in my area, and usually when that happens, I get a little sicky poo, Jason. So I've been sick, but I've recovered for sure. But yeah, man, I was sick on the couch watching me some UFC Moscow, and I tell you what, man, I don't know if I need NyQuil because that first half of that show almost put me to sleep. You know, the last two fights on UFC Moscow were plenty entertaining, but I tell you what, UFC Moscow was like the polar opposite of the pay-per-view we just had. That was a rough card for me personally to get there, man. A lot of these fights just, you know, they weren't doing it for me, and a lot of them lasted a very, very long time. I mean, we only had like one first-round finish, but, you know, I'm a little sick, Jason, but I'm kind of almost got a clean bill of health back. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. It's doing good. Outside of getting in the car this morning, I tweaked my back a little bit, so I got to put that CBD cream on me after we get done with the show. I was like, got in the car. I was like, oh, that hurt. Okay, all right. So, but yeah, it's other than that, everything's all good. I do got to admit, Daniel, so I went to a birthday party on Saturday night. I get home around like, 11:30, midnight Eastern time. I turned on DAZN. I watched the first two rounds of KSI and Logan Paul. I don't know what that says about me.
Yeah, no, we're just done doing the podcast. Time to you. So I guess we could talk about this.
Well, but here's the thing. So yesterday I get an email from DAZN where they are asking, say, hey, since you watched KSI, Logan Paul, what are your, all these survey questions? And I'm like, oh my God, is DAZN at this point where they're going to say, we're just going to put together fights of video gamers? Because that's what
they make them more money. Unfortunately, you'll make more money than a lot of the MMA product they're going to put on there. I mean,
I was thinking about this, I kind of wonder, when that fight is going on, what is going through Andy Foster's mind as he's sitting ringside? I mean, because, I'm sitting here, so when I turned that on, there was a fight on that was, I guess, quote-unquote, the co-main event, where guy ends up getting DQ'd, and the announcers are just basically talking about how this guy is trying to, he's trying to find his way out of the fight. And I'm sitting there going, man, in a way, it's kind of crazy about the amount of money those two guys have been able to generate, with their amateur fight and now this fight. And I'm sitting there going, I have a feeling that the days of us seeing social media personalities fighting each other, they're not coming to an end. I feel like there's going to be a lot of promoters out there that are going to sit there and say, hey, let's do this. And you got to know that there's probably some MMA promoters that are probably thinking the same thing.
Well, it's a real simple concept. Think back to grade school when you were in elementary or middle school. The one event that would always grab all the eyeballs is the fight. the fight between this kid and that kid. You didn't even have to know who the kids were. But if you did, even better. So, simply put, you have these really, really, really well-known, you know, celebrities in their own worlds, the YouTube world, etc. And they found a medium that people are going to put a little money down to watch them entertain, and that is the fight. The fight is a perfect medium to get people to watch you, and it's an absolute perfect medium for them to cash in on their notoriety and their fame, and if done well, it can be consistent. You know, we've seen a lot of times in celebrity culture where that we've had like celebrity boxing and stuff, and I think at the very beginning it pops well and people really pay attention, but it kind of fizzles out. And you know, I kind of hope we don't go in this direction, just because what I like out of mixed martial arts and boxing is more of a sporting perspective, and I get a lot of my entertainment from my pro wrestling diet. These things are big successes. You know, the KSI Logan Paul fight was something that really, really resonated with the entire internet. It's one of those things where if you turn on your Twitter or you go on the internet, you go on your Facebook, you're going to see it on your news feed, even if you don't know who these guys are. That lets you know that this thing really resonated with people. And whenever things really resonate with people, there's always going to be somebody coming for seconds and third. So yes, Jason, I think we'll see a lot more of these. Unfortunately, I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah, I saw one of the Bloody Elbow editors had posted something. I want to say it was on Saturday. And basically, it was in relation to, I think, some of the criticism they were receiving on, hey, why are you giving this coverage? And basically, it was saying, hey, by the way, all these bots that you get when you run a website, we're getting more off KSI Logan Paul than we did UFC Moscow, which I don't think is a shocker, because I mean, we talked about last week on the show, you know, when it came to UFC Moscow, you were watching for one reason and pretty much one reason only, and that was the beat and Calvin Kattar. You know, for me, I was interested to see how Greg Hardy would perform against Alexander Volkov. You know, in terms of that main event, my general thought about that fight is, if that fight was five rounds, I don't think Zabit and Magomed Sharipov gets the victory. I think Calvin Kattar gets a win. I mean, look, it's clear that Zabit won the first two rounds. Very clear that Calvin won the third round. I think there was a fourth and a fifth round. I think that we'd gone Calvin's way. You saw the gas tank was definitely wearing down with Zabit, you know, and I think it's, and I know, you know, after the fight, Zabit mentioned about how the staph infection really, you know, was played a role in his gas tank just not being there 15 minutes. But this isn't the first time we've seen Zabit slow down after 10 minutes of fighting. And I think that, look, he is extremely talented. But when you ask me, my biggest question was Zabit Magomed Sharipov is, I don't know if he's got a 25-minute gas tank.
I mean, he definitely didn't show it in the main event tonight, and this was a big talking point when this fight got the main event slot, was Zabit not wanting this to be 25 minutes, and the man is smart, because if it was, there's a great chance he wasn't going to get the winner's bonus and wasn't going to move up in the division with this victory. He looked real well in round one and round two. Round two was a lot closer than round one in my book, but just watching this fight, what you saw it as Zabit was just heavy, heavy volume compared to Calvin Kattar. And he just controlled the fight in rounds one, round two. He had the better striking output between these two fighters. And in round three, you nailed it. Zabit was tired. And, you know, he attempted takedowns, but they were blocked easily by Calvin Kattar. And what we saw to Kattar was he took advantage of Zabit, who was kind of going backwards and whatnot. And you saw Calvin, what he really did in round three that leads me to believe round four and round five would have been wins for him, was not only was Zabit tired, but what Calvin would do is he would go to the body again and again and again. And that just weakened your opponent in a big time way going at his core. I thought the strategy for Calvin Kattar would have worked out beautifully for a five round fight. And realistically, round two was a close one. I will say that much. So yeah, overall, just watching this fight, I mean, Zabit Magomedsharipov clearly won this decision. He won rounds one and round two as the better striker. He's a very well-rounded fighter. in terms of he obviously has to take down in the grappling game. His stand-up is great. But the issue of fighting for 25 minutes, I mean, the idea of him challenging for a featherweight championship, which he, honest to God, will has a case to face the winner of Volkanovski and Holloway. If he fights a champion, he better figure out how to finish that fight. And unfortunately for him, that has been a big issue for him. He has not been able to finish fights. It's been decision after decision.
There was nothing I saw from him on Saturday that maybe said he can beat Max Holloway, because I think Max Holloway's pace would give him trouble. And I just, you know, and look, it's he's just going to have to show it's there. I mean, I just saw it. I mean, and I think, look, you're correct. I mean, I think there's no question that, you know, he has put himself to get the winner of Holloway and Volkanovski. But, you know, if you tell me Zabit is fighting Max Holloway, there's not even a doubt in my mind my pick is Max Holloway. And there's not even, like, I don't even question it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I mean, the Volkanovski fight is just a lot more interesting than the Magomed Sharipov fight. The Magomed Sharipov fight versus Holloway would probably be one of the more, like, one of the least interesting featherweight championship fights we would have seen, I think. Because that one, you put the match up, and I just think Holloway's going to win that one. Even before Magomed Sharipov gets tired, I think rounds one, round two will go Holloway's way. I mean, for the featherweight division to give us some interesting results, I think what they may hope for is a Volkanovski victory, almost, to get a rematch between those two, Holloway and Volkanovski. Because to me, when I look at Zabit's case, it's more of he has earned a title shot because he's in a division where there isn't a lot of guys that have big time claims to the featherweight throne. I mean, he's kind of gotten – we've seen some guys in the UFC who have really pieced together impressive streaks. And I will say Zabit, while undefeated in the UFC is through six fights, his resume isn't the most impressive resume in the world. It's not going to get you into Harvard, but it'll get you into UT Austin. And that's good enough. But realistically, when you're talking about significant victories or Zabit Magomed Sharipov, as of today – I would say it's only Calvin Kattar and Jeremy Stephens. So it's not like he's like a damn can't wait to see him fight a contender, but he certainly earned the title shot. And watching this fight, I mean, it's clear he's a remarkable striker, a really talented fighter. But the issues we kind of talked about his game were still apparent.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, you know, and before this fight, he's, you know, pretty much been able to take guys down. I mean, I want to say heading this fight, and his, I think he's had five UFC fights heading this one. I think the number was 26 takedowns he had, and 11 of them were in one fight. But I think it kind of showed. I think it shows Calvin is clearly a top 10 featherweight. Now, in the co-main event, a clear win by Alexander Volkov. I think there's no doubt about that. And this is what I tweeted after the fight. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, one of the great things about Twitter is when someone likes it, you see who it is. And his manager was one of the people that liked what I said here about Greg Hardy. I said, clear decision win by Volkov. Hardy did better than I expected. As I said on the podcast this week, Hardy is a developing fighter and is getting better. Not sure how many people want to admit that due to his past. I thought that, look, clear win, but I thought Hardy performed better than I did. I mean, you know, it looks like he broke his hand in the opening round, but, you know, it just, you know, I think if, you know, to me, it just, I think Volkov played it safe, and I think you understand why he played it safe, because you're going up against a guy that could end your night any moment, and, you know, we saw what happened, you know, his fight against Derek Lewis.
Yeah, this fight wasn't particularly entertaining, for sure. I think this, again, was the theme of the card. Your assessment's correct, I feel like. The fact that Greg Hardy survived a 15-minute fight against Alexander Volkov and didn't drop a 10-8 round is a sign of improvement, because this was a huge step up in competition. I mean, it's important to remember that. And Greg Hardy didn't have too many great moments in this fight. I mean, it was clearly Volkov's fight from round one to round three. It was a really cautious approach, but the performance from Greg Hardy was a lot better than I had expected, and it's probably a detriment to the fans, because had it gone how I expected, it probably would have been a little bit more of an entertaining contest, but Greg Hardy was cautious and patient. With that being said, I think for him, in order to have gone out there against Volkov and get the victory, I think he would have had to have taken a much bigger risk, which would have made him look like a clown in terms of like going for broke early on in this fight. Could have led to him getting knocked out and looking like he didn't deserve to be there. But I also think that would have given him the best possibility for a victory. The aggressiveness wasn't there if it comes to like what can Greg Hardy do, I think, to put him in the best position to win. I think it's to turn this into an absolute firefight. And that just wasn't the case. Volkov controlled the distance, utilized his leg kicks in a big way to hurt entire Greg Hardy. And Greg Hardy was tired as the fight progressed, but it's not like he was super duper gassed. So overall, against a guy with nearly 40 fights, I thought Greg Hardy had a decent performance, and it was definitely something where you're seeing a progression in his game. But clearly, Alexander Volkov's a top-tier heavyweight, and his next fight should absolutely be against someone like Francis Ngannou.
In terms of the rest of UFC Moscow, anything really stick out to you about the fights?
You know, this fight card sucked. Like, again, I just want to reiterate, like every once in a while we have some good fight cards, but this one did. In terms of fights that were notable, I think you got to first point to David Sawada's win over Abubakar Nurmagomedov. Nurmagomedov took him down. Sawada locked on a triangle, kind of transitioned to an armbar, got the tap in the first round, the only first round finish, and a tough start for Nurmagomedov in the UFC. So that performance is something to keep an eye on. Danny Roberts had a nice knockout over Zalim Imadeyev on the main card, and this was a fight in which it was a lot of clinch work and whatnot. Then some space was created on the feet, and Roberts knocked him out. I thought, Roberts looked good. Other fighters that impressed me on this card, nice head kick knockout from Magomed Ankalaev against Dauka Lungiambali. And I thought that was a nice win. Carl Roberson got poked in the eye really badly after winning rounds 1 and 2 against Roman Kopylov. And he still, with his eye kind of damaged, was able to lock on a rear naked choke and get the victory. And then elsewhere on this card, I would say Rustam Khabilov really took a step back, even though he got the win over Sergey Kandoska. In the welterweight division, it just didn't look like he didn't have much of a size advantage, and again, not a very entertaining fight. And then two other notes would be, I felt as though in the Anthony Rocco Martin Ramazan Emiev fight, I thought Emiev won that contest against Rocco Martin, although it was a close decision. And then Ed Herman in the light heavyweight division, he had one of the more dominant and controlling decision victories on the entire card, I thought. And he looks pretty good with his light heavyweight victory over Kadys Ibrahimov.
Yeah, I think the other one I'll mention is Shamil Gazimatov getting the split decision winner of Gleison Abreu. I thought Abreu won the fight. But when it goes to the judges' scorecards, you take that risk. But of course, on Friday, we had Bellator 233. John Salter gets a win against Costello Vincenise. I think the thing with Costello is he just got to slow down. I think that if he would have slowed down, maybe he would have got the victory in this matchup. And, I know that's something that his team has kind of really talked to him about, is kind of slowing down and letting things come to you. King Mo loses his retirement fight against Andrew Capel, who, you talk about, taking advantage of your opportunity. Big win for him. Tyrell Fortune getting a win as well. His brother got a split decision win on the preliminary card, which you can make a case that, he did not win that fight, that Chuck Campbell, should have got the win. King Mo, this is a guy that, when we talk about fighters retiring, and I truly do believe that King Mo, unless there's like a legend type fight, I don't think you'll see King Mo. I know actually he was in a wrestling event the next night. But when you think about the legacy, this is a guy that, he never went to the UFC. He could have if he wanted to, but he did not. This is, he's a student of the game. I've had, when I was traveling out the Bellator events, you would see King Mo, and this guy was just a student of the game. I think he's going to be a great coach at American Top Team, but he's one of those guys that, you know, when you think about, you know, the staph infection and the knee injuries that he had, he's one of those cases where you just wonder if those injuries would not have happened, what more would he have accomplished in the sport?
I think he would have accomplished a whole lot, because the best version of King Mo we've ever seen was the very first version we saw with him in mixed martial arts. The very first run he had on was the most impressive run, and that must have been at the time when he had the least amount of injuries. From the get-go, King Mo was a star. When he debuted in Sengoku, I remember watching the fights on HDNet at the time, and he was a star, man. He came out, and I think immediately, I either saw him on HDNet Fights or I saw him on the Inside MMA show where they show the highlights. At first, because he would have these epic entrances and really understood the game because he had that pro wrestling fan base. So not only was he entertaining, but he would get dominant victories in Sengoku, and then he made the jump to Strikeforce. And that's when he reeled off a knockout win in his debut, and then the biggest win of his career was a decision win over Gegard Mousasi, and that put him in line to defend his. I mean, that's when he won the Strikeforce light heavyweight title. And that was the peak of his career. And that shows you kind of the talent level and the potential King Mo had. After that, he did lose to Rafael Cavalcante. And from that point forward, for the rest of his career, aside from a brief run, middle part of running his Bellator, it was win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. But I think that's a nice way to frame it, in that I think King Mo was a lot more talented than his resume would make you think. And the reason why is because of the injuries that kind of held him down and took away valuable time he could have spent in the gym.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing is, anyone's ever had a chance to sit and have a conversation with King Mo. I mean, this is a guy that I would tell you, if you're a fighter and you got a chance to talk to King Mo, sit down and take that opportunity, because the knowledge he has on the fight game is just it's just unbelievable. And I'd really love to see Bellator utilize him if they can in some type of commentary role. But now with him being a coach at American Top Team, that may change. One of the things, as I think of what we saw on Friday night, Bellator 233, is Tyrell Fortune is the real deal. And this is a guy that, I mean, you know, he trains with the Bellator heavyweight champion in Ryan Bader. So, I know those two guys, are not going to fight each other, but, he is the real deal. And you saw them give him a step up in competition with Nwanu here, gets a win in the second round. But I think that, he is a guy that I really feel like his next fight is going to be someone like a Javi Ayala, a Czech Congo, a Matt Mitrione type.
Yeah, I mean, he's 8-0, and it's time to get to work, is my thought on Tyrell Fortune. I mean, he's had about 3 years, 3.5 years professionally, and Azuna Anyanwu was a slight step up in competition. But it's about time. It seems like he's really found his comfort level in this sport. And at 29 years old, I think Tyrell Fortune, it's time to get off to the races. And big-time prospect in Bellator. He's been a staple of Bellator undercards, him and his brother. And Tyrell has obviously been the one who's kind of been a bit more impressive for sure. And I think in the heavyweight division, this is a division where he can have a lot of success. But yeah, big knockout win. Round one was Maso Menos. It was all right. But in round two, he got the finish. And I totally agree with you, man. I think Tyrell, it's time for him to get a step up in competition in his ninth fight.
Yeah, and when you look at those preliminary cards, I mean, if you've not seen the Christian Edwards knockout, man, what a just brutal knockout. Kind of reminds me of Kevin Lee's knockout he had against Gregor Gillespie. And his opponent was down for a while, too. It was kind of a little bit of a scary knockout, but winning in 16 seconds. Romero Cotton looked good. Kyle Crutchmere, really showed that wrestling abilities. Julius Angelikis getting the win against Jordan Young. And, Julius Anglicus is a guy that we saw on the Contender Series, someone that, you know, the UFC elected not to sign. And, you know, I think that's one of the things about the Contender Series is I know that a lot of fighters go in there in hopes that the UFC will sign them. But, you know, when you don't get signed, you know, Bellator can look at that tape and all of a sudden say, you know what, we want that guy. You know, we saw them do that with Austin Vanderfort. You see it with Julius Anglicus. There was another fighter, a middleweight, that just beat Joe Schilling. I can't think. It was Tony Johnson, you know, that they signed as well. And so, you know, it's another great way for Bellator to get fighters. You know, Logan Storm, another win as well. You know, John Salter really didn't touch too much on that. I mean, obviously, you know, I think he's right after Gegard Mousasi in looking for a middleweight title fight. And, you know, all signs do kind of point, you know, Lovato and Gegard are going to take place there. A nice little Bellator card. Nothing that I think 3 weeks from now you're going to, you know, maybe the Christian Edwards knockout probably will be the thing you remember the most.
Yeah, definitely. That is the memory of the fight card. And the main event was great. I enjoyed the heck out of it because it told a nice little story. And the story was simple. Costello Van Steenis should have won that fight. He was the better striker in this fight. The issue was simple. He couldn't stop that takedown. And, I mean, round three, man, he had Salter in a big, big, big amount of trouble. And the takedown from Salter was all it took. So I really enjoyed it in terms of, like, Costello really flashed what he does well. You're right. Maybe if he was a little bit more patient and not kind of aggressive with his approach, he would have got his hand raised. But this was a fight where the veteran in Salter showcased his wrestling and grappling ability to win this fight on points.
Yeah, and but that is last weekend's MMA. Of course, Bellator, the UFC do have fight cards coming up this week. We are going to preview those fight cards here in a little bit. But right now, it's time for the interview portion of the podcast. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with James Krause, who fights on Saturday at UFC Sao Paulo. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Lynn Vassell and Austin Vanderfort. Of course, both of them are going to be a part of Thursday's Bellator 234. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be making his way down to Brazil for the Fight Night card on ESPN+ on November 16th. It's James Krause. James, man, as always, appreciate your time. I was watching your interview with the Schmo, and I thought one of the things that I kind of found interesting, you talked about how, you know, sometimes you feel like you may be a better coach than a fighter. Why is that?
I don't know. I've been coaching just as long as I've been fighting. I mean, I've been coaching way before I should have been. So, I think there's still like I've really accomplished pretty much all the things that I wanted to accomplish in MMA, but I do feel like that accomplishing, like in terms from a coaching perspective, that I'm still young in the game. And, even though I do feel like I'm good at it, I still feel like there's a lot more that I can accomplish in that realm.
I know one of the things we've seen is the relationship between, you know, Glory and Factory X with you and Mark Montoya. And I've had a chance to talk to Mark many times. What is the biggest thing you've taken from Mark to be, you know, to be a great coach in this sport?
With Mark, it's pretty simple. I mean, it's his, the structure is the biggest thing. Like, he understands, he knows what it takes to get to that high level and stay at that high level. And he demands that level of discipline and commitment from his team. And if you don't have that, then he'll send you on your way. And I've seen him do it so many times. Like, he'll send guys packing that are 2 weeks from a fight, or you know, I've seen guys that are going to make him a lot of money that he's turned down. And I just think that his willingness to never settle on that structure is where his success is coming from.
You know, obviously, you're a coach, you're a fighter, you're a gym owner. Real estate is also part of the package with you. How do you balance, like, just everyday life of getting everything accomplished?
I'll let you know when I figure that out. No, I think it's a couple things come to mind is obviously scheduling. You got to schedule all that out and prioritizing. I think one thing that I'm really good at is prioritizing what's important now and what's important a month from now. I think I've done a really good job of that. But I would say the most important thing on juggling so many different things is having a good team around you. whether that be in the real estate realm or in the gym realm or from a fight perspective. You got to have people that can help you out. And I think that's the one thing that I have that's really good in all those aspects is I have a good team helping me out.
I mean, were you going to see a real estate show at some point?
Oh, I'd love to. Somebody else asked me that the other day. I would love to get on like HGTV or something. That's kind of played out with my friend Bristol Marunda. He does a great job. I love his show, you know, with the UFC fighter thing. And I don't know if it comes about, then I would love to do that. If not, it can't be any worse than being on The Ultimate Fighter. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to do that.
Obviously, you've been on a roll here, but of course, we haven't seen you in a year. I kind of feel like is you have the quietest 5-fight winning streak in the UFC. I mean, do you feel that way as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's just because of the volume. I don't fight that often. That's the only reason why. I mean, and I get it. I understand, man. Like, I just don't, there's nothing, fighting 3-4 times a year is just not possible for me. Like, it's just not something that I want to do. So, yeah, I just, 4 times a year is not something that I'm going to do or even will compromise to do.
I think one of the things in looking into this fight that you've got here against Shaymon Moraes is obviously you're coming off that win against Wally Alves. He's coming off a loss. Is that a fight that you've really looked at in comparison to how you fought him and how he fought him and do a comparison and contrast?
Well, they're just completely different styles. I mean, styles make fights, right? I mean, it's so hard to say that MMA math doesn't always make sense. You know that, like, you know, that's, with Alves, for me, looking at the fight, Sergio is a much more difficult fight than Worley, for the simple fact that if you look at Worley, Worley's a big puncher and tends to get tired. I don't get tired, and I don't really get hit with big shots, so I'm an elusive fighter. To whereas Sergio, he's good on the ground. He hasn't wrestled and taken the fight to the ground much as of late. I do think he's going to try this time. So yeah, I mean, I think that styles make fights. And, for me, I do believe that Sergio is a more difficult fight for me than Worley is.
How much of your thoughts on this fight when you're sitting there, you know, in the afternoon thinking about the fight is about what you want to do as opposed to what you think Sergio is going to do?
I mean, I believe if I show up and I do my thing, I don't think there's too many people that are going to beat me, including Sergio. So obviously I got to think that there's going to be a big gap in the striking department. You know, if you look at his fight with Worley, Worley beat him up standing, and watch my fight with Worley, you know, what happened when we were striking. So the only place that really concerns me is I just can't let him on top of me, you know, and if I do, I got to scramble. So he's got a very IBJJF style of like hold, squeeze, move 2 inches, hold, squeeze, move. And then you get frustrated. You have to overcommit on something, or you have to take a risk. And then that's when he tends to capitalize. So I just got to fight my fight, man. So to answer your question, it's more about me than it is about him. He's got some skills that he brings to the table, but I feel like my style matches up really well with his style.
Outside looking in, a lot of people will say James he's got to finish Sergio. You know, he may not be able to get the judges' scorecard going down to Brazil. Do you even think of that?
Nah, I mean, it's definitely something that I've, you know, to say that it never crossed my mind would be a lie. I have to dominate, absolutely. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I need to dominate, but I mean, don't I need to do that every fight? Like, do you think I'm gonna just because the judges are a little wacky in Brazil, you think I'm going to try more? Like, no, I'm always going to go out and try to finish. You know what I mean? I don't get paid by the hour. So, I can't really like, I can't let that enter into my brain of like, I'm going to do something different now just because somebody else is judging. Of course, I'm always going to try to finish. I'm always trying to dominate, you know, so that's not going to change just because judges are different here. So I'm definitely going to try to finish. I'm definitely going to try to dominate. If I don't finish, you know, that is in the back of my head. You know, I do think I will finish this fight, though. I think this fight's going to get finished one way or another.
Of course, we've seen you at 55, now here at 70. I'm a big fan of, I think, 165 should be added. I mean, it's in the unified rules. I mean, are you kind of one of those fighters? It's like, man, that would be like the best case scenario if we had that division.
Yeah, 65 would be great for me. Yeah, absolutely. It would be. 70 is easy for me to make. 65 would be pretty easy too. Honestly, ideally, I would like 60, but hey man, I'll take 65. Like 65 is where I, you know, if 65 comes, I would move immediately.
Is it safe to say 55, that door is completely closed?
Yeah, for me, unless there's a bunch of money on the table. Yeah, absolutely. I'm getting older. It just doesn't, I hate my life. I hate these interviews. I hate you. I hate that microphone. I hate Jimi Hendrix behind you. And I love Jimi Hendrix. So like, there's just nothing about 55 that I like, man. Like, I hate everybody and everything around me.
What's the easiest and toughest thing about living the fighter lifestyle?
Oh, it's just the grind is the toughest, right? I mean, like, I think the biggest problem is I have a thing where I say you cannot disrespect the game. And what that means is, like, just because you get older, that doesn't mean that you have to train the same, right? Like, you have to be in shape. You have to control the things that you can control. And as you get older, it gets harder. And your recovery time is less. So I think the grind catches up with everybody at some point, right? And that's where you see, like, these older guys, like, they come in a little bit more out of shape and they look a little slower. And it's just because they aren't willing to grind every day. You know, and then obviously the best part about living the fight lifestyle is it's kind of a free, for the most part, if you're living a real fight life, you're not working a 9-to-5 or it's just something that you love, right? I mean, you're doing something that you love, even if you're working a part-time job or you're not. You're getting up every day and you're doing something that you love to do.
You know, I was watching a video that Factory X put out there where you were giving like this speech to the team and the motto was, don't be a bitch.
Don't be a bitch, yeah.
Is there an origin of when that started?
Yeah, man. So Factory X has a lot of younger guys called freshmen and sophomore. They're just young and it's just the mindset and things have changed since I started, you know, whenever I started, it's a different world. And, some of these kids just don't realize what they have, you know, they want to take days off because some of them are just being a bunch of pussies. It boils down to, and it's not just at that team. It's every team. They want to see, you know, they see Connor and they see these other guys. They see the highlight reel of everybody's life. And they're like, that's the life I want to live. So they think that that's what they have to do. Right. And that's what they don't see is the daily grind that you have to go through. So it gets a little frustrating at times to see like some of these new kids, like try to shortcut. Man, there's no shortcuts in this game, man. And the truth always comes out here. That's what I love about the sport is the truth always comes out.
You know, I think one of the things when I talk to managers or other coaches, they're kind of like, you know, I've got guys in the gym that they just want to rush to the UFC. They want to rush to Bellator. Is that one of the toughest things for you as a coach of sitting there and go, look, I've got a plan here. Just trust me.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is. I mean, even when you're in the UFC, a lot of guys are like, I want to be in the top 15. Like, man, like just let's stack some money first. Let's ease our way into this. Cause all the newer guys, and I get it. I was once like that too, but this is a very, very unforgiving game. And if you think about it, let's say you're fighting, like, for example, I'll just use me for example, like I'm on a 5-fight win streak right now. And let's just say at any point in time, if you lose 2 in a row, the UFC's, I mean, you could be cut, right? I mean, they're cutting guys off wins. So let's just say I fight every 4 months. So that would be, I would fight again in 3 months and then another 3 after that. So I could essentially, my whole life could change. My whole income could change in 6 months time, right? Like, so these guys are like, I want to fight the best in the world. Man, you're a dipshit if you're constantly looking to fight the best in the world. Man, it's a business and you gotta find the paychecks. Now, when you get to that top level, there's different, you know, but when you just start out, that's where, in my opinion, that's where you need to, you know, work into that.
Yeah. We see it all the time in this sport. James, man, as always, appreciate your time. Safe travels down to Brazil. Of course, let me know anything, follow you on social media. Anybody else you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
No, man, I appreciate it. Z James Krause is all my stuff on social media. Follow me if you want.
Joining me now is one of the men that's going to the main event of Bellator 234, which you can watch on Friday night on the Paramount Network. It is Linton Vassell. Linton, as always, man, I appreciate time. You know, when this fight was announced, this one was, I think, a surprise to a lot of people. You know, is this a fight that you were actively pursuing, or is this one of the things that, you know, Bellator called you and said, hey, what do you think about this fight? And that's how it got made.
Well, again, like, I've always always looked at the heavyweight, I'd always watched the fighters at light heavyweight and the same as obviously heavyweight. So I knew I'd always, I would fight him at some point, like all the heavyweights. And I always knew at some point I'd get matched up with him. So yeah, they came up to me and said, yeah, you want to fight Sergio? Went back to my coaches. That was it. That was it. I didn't really think more than twice about this fight. And I feel like it's a perfect fight.
Of course, we saw the heavyweight debut for you last time. Is the mindset any different heading into this one as opposed to your first fight at heavyweight?
Yes, I feel like I'm in a better place now. I saw winning that fight with my eyes shut a little bit. Like, I thought if I weighed a bit heavier, that I'd get more, you know, that'd be my advantage. I didn't do as much cardio as I should. And I felt like it showed, you know, I tired in the third, and especially after I was winning the first round, close second round, he got two reversals and able to snatch that second round. And then he obviously just kept him down the third. So even if I feel like I was able to reverse him a few times or even get on top in that third round, I feel like I would have won my debut. So yeah, definitely changed a few things. I can't come into a fight not fit. And take enough away from Modosky. But, yeah, he has to come to a fight ready to do the rounds.
Now, you weighed in at almost 247 pounds for that fight. Are you coming in lower for this one?
Yeah, it's a little bit lower than before. I think I came in, like, 247. And if you think, when I used to fight, like, heavyweight, I was about 235 coming in. So that's a big jump. You know, again, I should have realized that. But, you know, you live and learn. So, yeah, I've been at this weight now, about 243, since pretty much March, round about that weight. So I've pretty much been training that weight from then till now, and I feel like I'm at the right weight, right now.
Obviously, fighting outside the United States is something you're very used to. Did you go to Tel Aviv a little earlier just to kind of, you know, make sure your body's, you know, where you want it to be?
I was actually in England. I went to England for 10 days before. England's 5 hours flight. So yeah, I went to England for 10 days and then from England to Tel Aviv.
And obviously, Sergey, I mean, you mentioned about me, this is, you know, when you talk about MMA heavyweight, you know, he is a name that everyone knows and, you know, he's coming off that win, against Matt Mitrione. You know, why would you say you like this matchup
That's
for yourself?
Right. I've seen his fights. And again, I've seen some holes in his game. You know, everyone's beatable, just because he's beat some big names himself doesn't mean he's not beatable. And I feel like I've got the tools. I've blatantly got the tools to beat him.
I think you would understand that a lot of people going into this fight are going to say,
people, unless you're in the business, that people don't understand, but all I can do is show you. That's all I can do. You know, I can say it, but you know, the best way is to show you.
Would that just simply be the message to the fans that maybe you are counting you out into this one? Is look, just tune in on the Paramount Network, and I'm going to show you, you know, why I can be. I mean, is that just a simple message?
It is. It has to be. And again, that's not being rude or ignorant or nothing. It is. The only way you can show someone or tell someone is if they tune in and watch. You know, it's a fight at the end of the day. Like, people just think, oh, he's got that name or he beat that person last. That's not it. If that was the case, then, you know what I mean, there wouldn't be people losing and stuff. You know what I'm saying? You know what it's like in an MMA game. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, this guy's going to smoke him, and then he doesn't. Or this guy's going to lose and he wins. You know what I mean? So,
you know, obviously, you know, Matt has trained down at Hard Knocks with Henry. Did you kind of pick Matt's brain about how he prepared for Sergey for both those fights and kind of maybe, you know, just try to pick up?
Not necessarily. I watched the fight a number of times. I felt like Matt had a perfect game plan. His gumshot obviously became a big issue. And I think it was messed with his head. He was winning that fight. He was the faster of the two. Again, I've trained with Matt before, a number of times. You know what I mean? So not Matt brings to the table. I know what works on Sergio. You know what I mean? I've seen his fights. I know what, you know, he doesn't like. So, yeah, I'm going to bring that and more.
obviously with Sergey being a veteran of the game, you know, you can watch film, you know what he's going to bring. But when this fight starts, is there something you're looking to see out of him, you know, in that first 15, 30 seconds to try to maybe see if, you know, he's added any wrinkles to his game?
Of course, yeah. I can't tell you what they are, but of course I will.
You don't want to give that away?
Nah, I'm good. I keep that to myself. Thank you, though. You tried.
Hey, look, all I can do is ask a question. You know, I get it. But, like, generally speaking...
Yeah, I know. Of course you can.
When a fight starts, not talking about Sergey, but just generally speaking, is there something you're always looking for at your opponent? Is it about, you know, how is he standing? Is there something in particular you're looking at?
Everything. Seriously, it's everything. Not just one thing. Mm-hmm. Everything. His reaction, his footwork, his demeanor, and that number of things.
Is that also part of, like, your preparations? Is like, you go back and you look at your own fights and you're trying to figure out what tendencies you showed and how do I get out of showing those tendencies?
Oh, well, yeah. Easily. 100% yes.
The heavyweight division.
Yes, definitely. You have to.
You know the heavyweight division. You can be one win away from an enormous fight based on just how you perform. You know, is that kind of your mindset, heavyweight? Of like, look, my road to the title is really quick. Is that kind of the mindset?
It's sort of unknown. You know, I don't just think, oh, if I beat this guy, I can get a world title or anything like that. You know, you obviously got the way you got to perform as well. Also comes into case as well, but I never look past the person I'm fighting. That's all my main focus is on that person.
Obviously, Bellator has gone to Tel Aviv now a couple of times since you've been there this week. What is the MMA culture like in Tel Aviv?
Oh, they love it out here. It's big. A lot of people have even said, "Oh, you're fighting, yeah? I'm coming." So yeah, the fan base is huge out here. They proper love the MMA fans and MMA fighters. So yeah, they're big supporters out here.
And of course, here in the States, everybody can watch these fights on Friday night on the Paramount Network, also on DAZN. Linton, as always, I appreciate the time and good luck here this week.
Yeah, thank you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who fights this week at Bellator 234, it's Austin Vanderford. Austin, man, I appreciate time. How's Tel Aviv treating you, man?
Oh, Tel Aviv is awesome, man. I love it here. Definitely a place I'll come back and vacation to.
You know, I know you're a guy that doesn't necessarily put a ton of things on social media, but it looks like you got there about a week out, but you hit up Portugal before you got there?
Yeah. So Paige had an event going on in Portugal right before, so the timing couldn't have worked out any more perfect. So we were able to bring our coach with us, and we spent it was only like two or three days in Portugal, and then right over here to Tel Aviv. So I was really able to get on a good time schedule, a good sleep schedule, and fully prepare myself for Thursday.
Yeah, you know, I went over to London a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things they talked to us about was, you know, getting kind of your sleep schedule right, because we left here on the evening, you know, landed in the UK in the morning. Is that something in preparations for your fight that you and your team had kind of had, you know, been mapping out of, okay, you know, this is what we need to do a week out for the fight to make sure that your body is where it needs to be?
Yeah, we did. We talked about it, and when the thing came up for Paige, you know, we were like, yeah, that's a no brainer. We'll go and do that. We'll bring our coach with us, and you know, it'll be a good opportunity to like you said, get on a good program, a good rest program, and it definitely worked out well, and you know, it's just been a cool time too to just kind of relax and get ready for a fight.
You know, I know one of the things about for you, you can't control what people say about you, but do you feel like there's a target on you every time you step into the cage just because of who your wife is?
You know, not too much, but at the same time, you know, I do understand that it's out there and all that, but it's nothing that I ever really give like a second thought to, and I just go on my whole career. I mean, for most of my career, you know, I think I'm I've had like maybe two fights where, you know, I wasn't with Paige and all that. But yeah, you know, most of my career has been, you know, I'm Paige Van Zandt's husband and all that. And it doesn't bother me. It doesn't really add any extra pressure to myself. You know, there might be extra pressure out there, but I don't let it consume me and I don't really feel it.
I know seeing you fight week, you know, earlier this year back in Connecticut, you just seemed like a very laid back guy. It doesn't seem like anything really gets to you. Is there anything that really pushes your buttons?
No, not too much, man. It's kind of funny. Not really. You know, I think I've done a good job at being able to distinguish, you know, the between social media and like real life and the people around me and whatnot. Of course, every once in a while you'll see something that kind of pisses you off a little bit, but like you said, you know, when we started off, I can't control what people think and I can't control what people are going to say about me. And I feel like I've done a good job at doing that and understanding that.
One of the things that fighters have always said to me is, you know, fight to fight, there's an evolution in your game. You know, how would you say you've evolved as a fighter from your two fights in the Bellator cage to where you're at now?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a level of comfortability. You know, the more cage time you get, the more comfortable you get. And I'm still pretty young in my fight career. I haven't been a professional for that long. I'm always learning and always trying to evolve and just be the best fighter I can. And, you know, it's hard for us to like sit back and see it. But I feel like, you know, if I'm training as much as I'm training and really taking to heart the things that I learned, that it's inevitable that I'm going to be progressing as a fighter.
When was the moment that you felt comfortable on fight night?
I think it varies fight to fight, but I've become more understanding of the process. And, you know, for me, I always get nervous. You know, we always get these nerves. And I think for a lot of fighters, you know, that there's a level of nervousness that goes into it. And not fighting the nerves and embracing it and just understanding what I'm going out there to do and what, you know, what I love to do. I love to compete and I love to fight. I absolutely am obsessed with fighting and being a martial artist. So it's a fun process and it's something that I'm not going to be able to do forever. And I'm really learning and trying to just cherish like the time that I have to do it right now.
You talk about being obsessed with being a martial artist. Are you able to flip that switch off and just be the normal person walking around the street going about your daily business, or is it something that you just can't switch off?
Yeah, it's something that you can't switch off. I think about fighting every day, all day. You know, even when I don't have a fight coming up, I'm watching film. I'm watching some fighters that I love to watch. And it's not really something you switch off. You know, I think when you're a fighter and especially when you're, you know, a true martial artist, it's your lifestyle. And I definitely have that for sure.
So if you can watch one fighter fight, who is it?
I've always been a big GSP fan. Really, I watch a lot of George St. Pierre fights. His technique is just like his awareness and his understanding of fighting. But then there's guys that I love to watch because I love their mentality. Like Mike Perry, man, I'm such a big Mike Perry fan and his mentality when it comes out to fighting. So, you know, I'll watch a lot of his fights too, and just see that confidence, and you know, watching him walk into the cage and how confident he is that, you know, he's going to go out and take care of business. So, there's other guys, but you know, right off the top of my head, for sure.
Now, your opponent here this week here at Bellator 234, you know, I think one of the things that really sticks out to you, you know, when I pull up his Tapology page is the fact of, you know, he hasn't fought since June of 2017. You know, he's had a couple of canceled fights. I mean, how do you prepare for someone that the last footage you have of him is from 2 years ago?
Yeah, you know, it's inevitable that he's probably done some evolving in his skills himself from that time. And, you know, so I think the most important thing is for me to go out and fight my fight. Of course, there's some things that, you know, I've watched and some of his fighting style that we've kind of broken down and whatnot. But I think more than anything, the most important thing is myself and controlling what I can control. And that's me and what I'm going to go out and do.
Is that something you learned or in your career about, hey, I can only control one thing. That's me. I can't overanalyze too much of my opponent.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've competed in wrestling my whole life too. And you know, for me, like the feelings are very similar and all that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that really is all that we can control is ourselves. And, you know, like I said, there's some things that we see on his video that we can prepare for and be ready for. But like you said, you know, in 2 years, I think I've only been professional for like 2 years, you know, and I feel like I've changed and evolved quite a bit in that period of time. So, I know one thing that for me that, you know, hasn't changed, and that's my determination and, you know, my will to want to win and go out and do whatever it takes to win. And so for me, that's the biggest focus.
Austin, you mentioned about obviously a key to victory is for you about being yourself and going out there and controlling what you can control. Is there something else that you label as a major key to victory?
You know, I think just having a strong mindset and a good mentality and all that. And, you know, I think going into this fight and preparing the way I've prepared, I think I'm ready to do that. And I think I've got that wrestling mentality and I've got that, you know, that will to go out there and do whatever it takes to win.
Awesome, man. I appreciate your time. Good luck this week.
Thank you very much.
And there was my conversations with James Krause, Linton Vassell, and Austin Vanderford. Of course, Linton and Austin will be fighting on Thursday in Tel Aviv at Bellator 234. That fight card will air via tape delay on Friday on the Paramount Network and also simulcast on his own. Of course, UFC Sao Paulo on Saturday will be a part of ESPN Plus. And, you know, Daniel, first off, that Bellator 234 card, just looking at the main card there, you know, I wouldn't say appointment television watching, I think would be a way to discuss that. You know, the thing about the main event, it's an odd main event to me. You know, you look at Sergey and obviously, you know, he had that stumble when he got knocked out by Javi Ayala. But outside of that, this guy just keeps on winning fights. Linton Vassell lost his heavyweight debut earlier this year. And, you know, people just heard it in the interview, you know, Linton talked about, you know, how the mindset is different this time out and realizing some things that, you know, was carrying around too much weight, you know, the first time for the heavyweight fight. But this is, it's an odd fight. And I look at it from Linton Vassell's aspect. It's tough for me to see the path to victory.
Yeah. I think for Linton Vassell, the issue is I don't think, look, I think Karatanov, the path to victory is Father Time. For Linton Vassell, he's got to hope at some point Sergey Karatanov looks like he should look, because Karatanov not only is 39 years old, he's been fighting since literally Y2K, and he's been fighting in quite a few wars. So for Linton Vassell, I think on paper it's like, damn. I mean, you know Karatanov is not someone you want to mess with, especially on the feet, and that's going to be a lot of issue. So for him, it's just like he's got to hope that Karatanov fights like a pumpkin. You know, on Friday night and fights unlike how he normally does for his path to victory. And, yeah, man, I mean, this is definitely not appointment viewing television. I mean, fortunately, we're going to make this appointment 36 hours late anyway. So again, so this isn't airing live on DAZN, right?
No. Okay. It's a quote unquote Paramount event, so they can't air it live. You know, I think that, you know, when I look at the fighters that, you know, I sit there and say, well, you know, what am I interested to see? Sydney Outlaw would be someone that I would point to. This is going to be his Bellator debut, or excuse me, fought back in Bellator back early on in his career in 2014. But, you know, another fighter who got a win on the Contender Series back in 2017. You know, since that fight, he's rolled off another four consecutive victories. You know, when you look at, he's lost three times in his fight career. His last fight, Daniel, last loss was a split decision loss against Gregor Gillespie in Ring of Combat.
Yeah, that's not a bad loss.
No. And, no. I mean, he's got some good wins on his career. You know, and he's taking on Roger Huerta here. And, of course, you know, Roger's, you know, lost back-to-back fights against Benson Henderson and Patricky Pitbull. I mean, that fight against Patricky, he was actually looking pretty good. You know, so that one sticks out to me. You know, and Austin Vanderford. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, I mean, look, unfortunately for Austin, everything is always going to be about, well, you're the husband of Paige VanZant. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate, but that's, but you know, when I've talked to Austin a couple times and, you know, he kind of takes in stride. And I mentioned in the interview, it's when you're around Austin, he just seems like a very laid back guy. It doesn't seem like anything really pisses him off. And, you know, and he's a guy that I think Bellator can really develop and interested to kind of see, you know, how that happens there. But, you know, outside of that, man, there's just, you know, it's not one of these cards that even though it is a tape delay card that you sit there and say, I'm going to be, you know, from my television on Friday night.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm mildly interested in watching Robson Gracie fight on the undercard. The number one reason to watch this fight card is Austin Vanderford. I think he's the fighter to watch, really talented. And, I think it's a fight where he's going to get a victory and he gets a nice little trip to Israel out of it. So I think Vanderford's the number one reason to watch. Sydney Outlaw, I think, is going to go out there and get a victory over Roger Huerta, who has looked better, but Roger Huerta has not looked good for 12 years. I mean, 2007 was the last time Roger Huerta looked like a great fighter. And he's turned it around as of late. That two-fight win streak he had, where the last one was over Haider Hassan, at least he looked like an okay fighter, which is a step up from what he used to be. But, you know, Roger Huerta, there's a Bellator Hall of Fame. He might be in it. Because just because he was a guy who was in that original tournament, I believe. And I guess he wasn't. He was in the second season. I don't know why I thought he was in the original tournament. But I know when Bellator got Roger Huerta, he was someone who I felt helped establish Bellator and establish guys like Pat Kern and Eddie Alvarez, who got those initial victories over Huerta. And Huerta, a very important part of Bellator in terms of the early goings, because in the pro sports business, in the combat sports business, usually in order to put a guy over and make him into a star, you got to have guys who are notable worth beating. And he served that purpose for Bellator, allowing Alvarez and Impact Curran to get some victories early on in their Bellator runs.
You know, that's one of the crazy things. When you look at season one of Bellator and the names that were on season one, Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Eddie Alvarez, Luis Palomino, Jonathan Brookings was on there. Daniel Serafian, who had some time in the UFC. Wilson Heiss, Lyman Good, Jimmy Rivera was on season one. Hector Lombard. I mean, these are, you look at some of the names that were just on season one that they were able to get there. Even Jessica Penne had a fight in Bellator during season one. I mean, it's kind of amazing some of the fighters that, you know, Bellator did have there early on. I want to say Travis Brown fought maybe on season one or season two as well on a preliminary card. So yeah, I mean, it was, you know, kind of crazy the amount of names they had on there. But on Saturday, we've got UFC Sao Paulo. You know, there is, you know, one change to the fight card. Priscilla Cachoeira, you know, out, you know, due to the USADA issue. Veronica Machado now taking on Arianne Lipsky. It is kind of crazy. The third fight on the prelims is Hennen Burrell. And
that's crazy.
And you know what? His fight against Douglas de Andrade may be one of the funnest fights on this card. I think that, you know, in terms of, you know, it seems like we're continuing the road tour of let's put on a bit notable light heavyweight matchups to see who John Jones could fight next, as we've got Jan Blachowicz taking on Jacare Souza. Jacare Souza now at 205 pounds. Of course, Shogun was supposed to fight Sam Alvey in the co-main event. Sam Alvey pulls out. Now we got Paul Craig, Jared Gordon, Charles Oliveira, that's a fun fight I'm interested in. Kraus Moraes, I think it is a fight that's going to deliver as well. But I mean, look, I think clearly you look at it, is what does Jacare look like when, you know, fighting at 205 pounds against a pretty big 205er in Jan Blachowicz?
Yeah, I mean, Blachowicz might be a really bad, we might see like the exact same situation we saw with Chris Weidman and Dominic Reyes here. I mean, Blachowicz is the favorite in this fight. And he's a very, very tough welcoming committee to the light heavyweight division for Jacare Souza. And it's just like when you look at the size, Jacare is not going to be able to impose his will at all against Blachowicz. And this could be, I think it's a sign of bad matchmaking. I think it really is. Because when I look at someone like Jacare Souza, and he may very well go out here and get a victory, I think he has a lot of potential to be marketable in the light heavyweight division. But coming off the loss of Hermanson, I would really have put him in a fight where he's the favorite, and you think he's going to make that transition to the light heavyweight division and get a highlight reel victory. Because I look at Jacare Souza on the tail end of his career, and I still think he has a lot of marketability left in him and quite a bit of talent. But that needs to be nurtured, and I definitely don't think it's being nurtured here, because I think this is a fight that's setting up for a Blachowicz victory.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I mean, you look at, you know, 2017, the last time he's won back-to-back fights, you know, in Blachowicz, a 2-1 betting favor, which I think is a line that does make a lot of sense there. I do expect a Jan Blachowicz win. You know, Shogun should beat Paul Kelly. He should.
Well, he should beat Paul Kelly. And he better be Paul Craig.
Or Paul Craig, excuse me.
Yeah, if he fights Paul Kelly, I remember Paul Kelly back in the day, he used to be like a lightweight.
Paul Kelly, actually, when John Green was the coach of the Bucks, Paul Kelly was the guy that you would see throw the red flag.
That's who you were. That's
and he might have had the best arm I've ever seen. He would grab that red flag and literally that official could be at the 50-yard line in the middle of the field. He'd put that red flag right at the feet of that official.
I feel like they should pay Paul Kelly some money and do that as like a little sideshow, because that would draw me to the TV screen more than some of these fights, Jason.
Oh yeah.
I mean, look, Shogun better beat Paul Craig, and if he doesn't, at the end of the day, Shogun's established himself in just a higher tier than Paul Craig, and if he doesn't, that's when we return to the conversations of maybe it's time for Shogun to wrap it up. Kind of put some energy to his career.
Yeah, with his latest. You know, I think, it, you know, and obviously it's been almost a year since we've seen Shogun. You know, when he got that win against Tyson Pedro, which, I mean, who thought that was going to happen? But, you know, when you look at, you know, Shogun has quietly put together, you know, a nice little streak here, winning 4 out of 5 fights. You know, I don't, you know, look, I think that could he work his way to a title fight? I guess so, but do I think he can beat anyone in the top five? I'd probably say no.
Mm-hmm. I definitely concur with your thoughts there.
Jared Gordon, Charles Oliveira, I don't think it's in either one of their DNAs to have a bad fight.
No, this is the fight I'm looking forward to the most, because I think it's going to be the most exciting. And in this contest, I mean, I think Oliveira should be a pretty heavy favorite against Jared Gordon. And correct, I think he's going to have a very entertaining victory. Charles Oliveira is just all action all the time, whether it be striking or with his grappling. I would expect a real fun victory for him.
Yeah, he's actually the biggest betting favorite on the fight card here as of Wednesday morning. He's minus 355. I think Kraus and Moraes is going to be an action-packed fight. You know, earlier in the show, James Kraus basically said that you know, he feels that this one's not going to go to the scorecards and that someone's going to get a stoppage win here. You know, I mentioned about him, Barao, Douglas de Andrade. I think that could be a fun fight, of course. And, you know, if you're going to watch these fights, you know, early on Saturday, you know, main card will start
8 p.m. Eastern time. Prelims are at, I want to say, 5 p.m. Eastern time. So looking forward to seeing kind of how these fights play out. I think I'm going to be sitting at home on Saturday. Last weekend was an eventful weekend for me, Daniel. Woke up on Saturday morning and realized, well, need a new hot water heater.
So what'd you do? Did you get your parents to do it? That's what I do with anything that's hard.
I called the plumber. They were there quickly. I couldn't believe it. Called them. I was literally got up and I was like, all right, I need to wash some clothes and go right into the garage. And I go, well, that's not good. Like, I knew I was going to have to change this, get a new one eventually. I knew it. And I was just like, ugh. And the worst part was, is so he had to come in through the garage. And I call my garage is just where I throw all my Amazon boxes at. And I had to create a path for him. So that was pretty much my Saturday. I had to create a path for him to get the old water heater out and put the new one in. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You got to learn how to use a dumpster.
I tell you, I was looking the other, like a couple weeks ago, like, you know, they have these things where like you get that big bag and they come pick it up, and that's not cheap, brother. That's not cheap.
Yeah, I get you.
Thankfully here at the office. So what I did was I took a bunch of the cardboard and brought it here to the office. But yeah, man, that was my eventful Saturday. And then of course, watch that LSU Alabama game. That was a fun game. To watch, and of course we had a Buccaneer victory on Sunday, so that's made the weekend much better. But of course, we're at the part of the show where we like to talk about some MMA news and notes, and you know, the top note we want to mention is about Gilbert Melendez, released by the UFC. And Melendez released a statement saying, quote, "It was a fun ride with the UFC that I really enjoy. I feel I gave them one of the most entertaining fights in their history against Diego Sanchez, and I appreciate all they've done. They have done a bunch of cool stuff for all their fighters. That said, I do feel this release is mutual. I was ready to move on. I feel like if I were to fight again, I would like to do it on my terms and steer my own ship. The UFC is a fantastic organization, but they have their agenda. And unless you're the champion or a super strong needle mover, you don't have as much say in your career. If I do go back in the cage, I want to be with a company that agrees with my path that I want to be on, but I'm not leaving, but I am leaving the UFC on great terms." And obviously, and that's Gilbert Melendez. And of course, Gilbert does, you know, work for ESPN, you know, covering the UFC. And, you know, I mean, look, I think, you know, right when everyone saw this, I think everyone kind of had the same word came out of everyone's mouth, and that being Bellator. But Daniel, I got to think Combates America would be very interested in Gilbert Melendez.
What makes you say that?
Well, obviously, Combates America is, you know, they're looking for Hispanic fighters. Even though I do know managers have said to Combates of you should, you know, look at, you know, other nationalities as well. But, you know, Combates needs fighters that are going to get people interested into turning into their product. I mean, you know, we talked about their pay-per-view last week, and you know, have they done a great job, you know, a great job of getting people, you know, interested in purchasing that pay-per-view outside of, you know, giving you notable names on the undercard? No, they haven't. I mean, I know this week they announced Joby Sanchez is going to be on that card. They also announced that Caster and Noah is going to be on that card, but you know, I think if you would add someone like a Gilbert Melendez to that pay-per-view, I think that would offer a little bit of name value to get people interested. I mean, it's kind of like I was on Fight TV this week, and I was like, would you rather pay $29.99 to watch Combates America's pay-per-view, or would you pay $29.99 to watch the bare knuckle event this weekend?
Oof.
So remember it's a rematch between Lobov and Jason Knight.
Yeah, I would spend the money on the Combates America's card just because that's my cup of tea.
Yeah, but, I can feel you on that one.
But I tell you what, I'd rather spend that money on like Disney Plus and then have enough money left over for a couple hamburgers.
Dude, I'm sitting there going, I told my wife last night, I'm like, well, I guess we got to get Disney Plus for our nieces.
Yeah. Be a good Christmas present. But what you got to do is once you get it for him, you don't do the recurring credit card subscription. You do like have it for 6 months, enjoy it, because I guarantee you after 6 months, they'll stop watching it.
Well, yeah, that was a thing that I was, you know, because it was, you know, I know they do have a bundle of
Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu. I think it was, what, $12.99 a month? I mean, obviously, it was a big talk, and but then I was thinking, I was like, man, how many streaming devices do I kind of pay for?
Yeah, yeah. Disney Plus isn't something that I'm paying for, but I know a lot of people are, and yeah, but yeah, I will say,
like, I'm scared to list off all the streaming devices I have.
Yeah, well, you got to print out that credit card information, man, with a highlighter. You got to highlight which ones you got to cancel. I'm telling you, man.
Well, it's like, so I've got, so I bought my new iPad. They gave me a year of Apple TV Plus. So, you know, that debuted, what, last week, 2 weeks ago, something like that. And I went on there and I'm like, I wouldn't pay for this. You know? Like, yeah. I get HBO for free for being an AT&T customer on the Watch ATT app. So I don't pay for that, but like I pay for YouTube TV, I pay for, you know, obviously Amazon Prime, which isn't, you know, we watch stuff on Amazon Video, but it's obviously for, you know, buying stuff off Amazon. You know, obviously I've got DAZN. I keep forgetting to cancel UFC Fight Pass, so I have that. Which I guess now with LFA on there, at least there's somewhat of a reason to have it. God, what else do I have? Netflix.
Netflix to me is the only thing you got to keep.
I don't think I'm missing anything else.
I'm sure you are, and that's the problem. The problem is the subscription you don't even know you have that's draining your bank account. You know,
like I'm just like, do you
have that Athletic subscription?
I do. So I was like, you know, there was, you know, when they obviously got into the MMA, you know, started doing MMA reporting. I was like, hey, you know what? Let me get this to show my support for the journalism that's going on there. And it's long form writing, which I'm not big on as a reader. I don't know if I've gone on The Athletic more than 10 times since I've got it.
Exactly. And that's, yeah. And that's what
year's up. Oh yeah. No way. No way. Cause I remember, you know, I paid like $30 for a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, but then like, yeah, it's like, oh, once your 1 year's up, you go full price, which is like $80 a year. No, thank you.
Yeah. You probably won't even spend 80 days on there. I mean, yeah, I think,
but to get back to Gilbert Melendez.
Oh yeah.
I mean, look, I think there is, you know, I just don't know if Combate could put the money on the table that say a Bellator could. But man, you look at, if he were to sign with Bellator, there's two fights that stick out to you immediately.
I think the first fight is easy, and it has to be the fight he does next. It's the fight I demand. He's got to fight Josh Thompson again in Bellator. I mean, the trilogy of fights they had in Strikeforce, especially those first two fights, but the third one was great too, was just one of the more important foundational pieces of Strikeforce. And from a nostalgic standpoint, I need to see Gilbert Melendez versus Josh Thompson 4. Now, what's the other fight that kind of sticks out to you, Jason?
Benson Anderson rematch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are two fights that stick out to me. I mean, I think that on the Josh Thompson thing, I think it's just a matter of does Josh want to fight again? I mean, obviously he's got a nice little media career that he's created for himself. You know, but I think if you told me I got to lay money on where if Gilbert Melendez fights again, where is it at? The money has got to be on Bellator.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the money. And make Josh Thompson, Gilbert Melendez co-main event of a big card in San Jose.
Yeah. Yeah. I think absolutely that's a great strategy, and it comes full circle, man. All of these Scott Coker guys seem to finally find their way back to Coker. It's amazing.
Yeah. The other thing we want to mention is Khabib Nurmagomedov was doing an interview with the Associated Press, and he wants an apology from the Nevada State Athletic Commission to fight in Las Vegas again. Here is his quote. They offered me to fight in Vegas in March, but I told them that if Vegas officially apologizes for wrongfully fining me for that incident on October 6, 2018, I will fight there. If not, then they can assign me another date. As far as I know, they're planning in April to hold a fight card somewhere in New York. So I'm saying I'm ready for April or March in Vegas if Las Vegas apologizes. Daniel, I'm baffled by this. Does Khabib Nurmagomedov still think he did nothing wrong? Khabib, the governor of Nevada, was front row, and he ran out of that building because he was scared. Like, I don't know, like, why you, I sit there, and look, if you want to sit there and say, you know, I feel I was fine so much, but, like, this is one of those situations with Khabib, I'm like, who are the people around Khabib to talk some sense into him?
Yeah.
Do we have glorified yes men around Khabib?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what to tell him. I mean, that quote is insane. That they're not going to apologize.
No. You can't. No. They're going to laugh at you.
Exactly.
And ultimately, like, what's going to happen? The UFC is going to eventually look at Khabib and go, you're fighting in Vegas. You want to make all these millions to fight? You're fighting in Vegas.
Mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah,
it's mind-boggling.
Like, I just sit there and go, like, does he not, like, understand that he was one of the people responsible for what happened on that night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this isn't a situation where he got screwed over. I mean, he was responsible for that situation. He helped, he escalated it. And it's unbelievable that he comes out with this. I mean, just take your L, man. But to ask for an apology, you're just antagonizing people you don't want to antagonize for no reason to antagonize them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, obviously, you know, this is a respect thing for Khabib, and I understand that, but it's also kind of like there's got to be someone around him that goes, Khabib, man, you gotta understand that you were one of the key factors in why the post-fight altercation escalated to what it escalated to. I mean, and look, there are certain aspects of that whole thing, how Nevada handled it, that just, I think, are completely wrong. I mean, the fact of, you know, they basically tried to hold up Dylan Danis' career as long as they possibly could in that situation, which, you know, Dylan lost out on two fights because of Nevada just not making a ruling on that situation. And of course, the fact of reducing a suspension, so, you know, one of Khabib's training partners could fight in Abu Dhabi, which is just ridiculous. But it's something that I saw and I was just like, man, Khabib, like, I get, you've got yes men around you, but I would just hope there's somebody to talk some sense into him.
I think there isn't, because that person would have already got to him, and we're late in the process. And for this to still be his mindset tells me the people around him are just yes men, and they're not willing to have an uncomfortable conversation with him. And that's a dangerous place to be. Once you get on top, you're going to find that your circle isn't going to be the same circle you had when you were a nobody. But the people who are around you when you are a nobody are going to help you keep yourself in check and make smarter and better decisions when you make it. But unfortunately, we see it time and again, man. You become a star, and everyone is concerned about getting that dough from the star, mm-hmm, and not, mm-hmm, making sure that star keeps his dough.
Yeah, you know, you're spot on. Other thing I mentioned, Derek Anderson has pulled out of his main event fight next week at Bellator in London against Michael Page. A undisclosed injury is why that Derek Anderson pulled out of the fight. Bellator now seeking a replacement opponent for Michael Page. And I know Curtis Millender once has talked about wanting to fight Michael Page. I don't think they'll go that route, though. I have a feeling that whoever the opponent is, we're just going to go, it's a short-notice fight.
Yeah, short-notice fight. I mean, that fight card's all about Michael Page fighting.
Well, most likely you're talking about it. It's going to probably be a European-based fighter just due to the visa aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you had a United States-based fighter ready to step in and take that fight, you know, I think the question is, could you get the visa obtained in time for the fight? So it might be a London-based fighter that gets that fight. So we'll see what happens there. But you were already in the middle of November?
Yeah, man. No Shave November.
You realize it was I think it was yesterday, was the 3-year anniversary of Conor McGregor becoming the champ in the UFC.
Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy. It seems so far away.
I know.
And think about where we were at that moment. It'll all the malarkey that's happened since.
So I'll end on this note. So I appeared on a radio show yesterday. Like, hey, Jason, can you come on, you know, talk a little UFC? Yeah. So I think this always gives you a very good idea of what the casual, the mainstream sports media thinks of. So what do you think the three main questions were?
God, I can't. I don't even want to. Well, what were they?
So we had Jorge Masvidal, obviously, and then bringing up, could we see him versus Canelo in a boxing fight?
Oh my God! Yeah.
When will Conor McGregor return?
Yeah, no.
And Nick Diaz's interview with Ariel Helwani.
Jesus. Yeah.
And the other question I thought was an interesting question was, is there a female fighter who could become the next Ronda Rousey? I had one name.
Who was it?
Macy Barber.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got the attitude. Absolutely. And she gets it how to promote herself. So along with the attitude, she's got the talent. And I think Macy Barber is probably the best pick, man. I mean,
it got asked me. I was like, oh, that's a good question. It was like you're thinking off the top of your head. I'm like, oh, that's going to be Macy Barber. It's got to be.
Yeah, Macy Barber is the name to come to mind. And man, there really isn't anyone else other than maybe Tatiana Suarez, but I don't know. Maybe Cynthia Calvillo, but realistically, Macy Barber is the best choice.
Yeah, Suarez would be a good second option. I mean, look, I think she's extremely talented. I just think from a...
Oh, shoot. You know, the obvious... Well, Kayla Harrison would be a bit too on the nose.
But the problem is as long as she's fighting PFL...
Yeah, but she's going to go to the UFC, I think.
Hey, look, if you're Kayla Harrison, keep cashing those million-dollar checks.
That's a good point. That's a hell of a point.
Think about this. If she were to sign with the UFC tomorrow, the UFC, they're not paying her anywhere near that kind of money.
They're not paying her $1 million. I'm doing that much.
I mean, you know, maybe you're lucky you could potentially make half of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately, it's just, I mean, like, that's the whole thing with the PFL. It's like, as long as the PFL is around, you just want to keep cashing those checks.
Yeah, that's a good point, because the PFL won't be here forever, I don't think. I just don't. Yeah, so I think as soon as she's done cashing those checks, though, she's making her way to the UFC.
Oh, yeah. You know, well, I mean, I think the other question about it is you know, does she want to cut to 145 pounds? You know, she's kind of, you know, she's talked about, you know, wanting to fight at a more natural weight, which for her is 155 pounds. I mean, I think that's, and of course, then the other part of that question becomes is the UFC truly in the 145 pound business still?
Yeah. And I think they are in terms of, like, they're only in that business to promote a superstar. So that division could die.
It's one-off fights.
And they can just bring back – it's one-off fights, yeah. But they'll revive that division for Kayla Harrison, is my belief, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. But that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, you can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, RadioInfluence.com, TheMMAReport.com. I'm going to have some video interviews up on TheMMAReport.com later on this week, so look out for that as well. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.